Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Thanks for listening to the Dusty and Cam in the Morning podcast, brought to you by your local Les Schwab Tire Centers, where I get my wild country tires. Les Schwab, doing the right thing since 1952.
We're brothers from New Hampshire. With venture capitalists.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning.
Sick of that. Let's be from Vermont and let's have an emerging maple syrup conglomerate.
With Dusty Hera.
Stupid, we don't know anything about maple syrup.
And NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
I happen to know everything there is to know about maple syrup. I love maple syrup. I love maple syrup on pancakes. I love it on pizza. I like to take maple syrup and put a little bit in my hair when I've had a rough week. What do you think holds it up, slick?
Dusty and Cam on 1080.
I'd like to be pimps from Oakland or cowboys from Arizona, but it's not Halloween. Grow up, Peter Pan.
The Fan.
Bravo on the new open, Wedding Crashers open. When I saw the label Wedding Crashers open, I was thinking we were going to get football and crab cakes, too.
Man. I thought about that, but I was inspired by, was the last week we played that clip?
Maple syrup,
yeah,
baby.
Breakfast themed for the morning show.
Well, that was based off of Dirty Money, which Cam and I have both watched. Have you gotten into Dirty Money?
Have not watched it yet, no.
Oh, it's excellent. Excellent.
Yeah, I've had several people ask me about that.
I gotta take a shower every time I watch an episode.
since we talked about the maple syrup episode of Dirty Money, mm-hmm. people have asked, like, were you being serious? I'm like, yes. Like, there's a maple syrup cartel run by the Canadian government.
It's a mob.
Yeah, it's wild. People take it so seriously.
Can't believe it.
No, it's unbelievable. All right. You want to get to some football? You want to talk some football?
It depends.
All right. Can I read a text from our last segment, though, that I think are very wise words?
Sure.
We got a texter that said, we were talking about how people just overreact, and he had like three texts that was like, hey, there's just dumb people that don't adhere to the rules, mm-hmm. dumb people that overreact to them, just dumb people. But he ended it with this. He says, in fact, my one comfort for when I'm dumb, that's often, is the knowledge that there's always someone dumber. And you know what the great part about...
I love that.
The human race is? The great part about the human race is that the dumbest person on this earth, who there is somebody that there is no one dumber, has no idea. Because that's just the way we're wired. Yeah. Like, he's like, you don't know.
If you had some dumb qualifications, what would you put at the top of the list of dumb qualifiers?
Like, what do you mean? Like, how I know somebody is dumb?
How do you
dumb?
Know somebody is dumb? Like, when you say it's qualifiers, you go like, oh boy, that's on the verge of being really, really dumb. And I'm not saying it's an IQ test, because that's not what we're talking about here.
When they start their sentence with, Paul!
So the Feinbaum show, huh?
Paul!
I will go with...
Because don't you think it's a moving target?
It is definitely... Well, it depends on the scenario. And that's where that text is so spot on, is that every single person is smart or wise in some aspect of life. And I believe that. I believe that every person... that is grown up, that is an adult, they are smart or wise in one field where they're better at most doing something.
Ooh, everybody Tiger Woods has better than most.
But what is that?
Tiger Woods better than most.
Is that what he said?
Sawgrass, no. Putt on 17 when he made it. Anyway.
Oh, he said it was better than most?
No, the announcer did. Sorry.
Oh, anyway, I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that. But they're better than most at some aspect of life. Like, I believe that. And so it is a moving target. It's a total moving target because not everybody's just dumb at everything. You know, it, like the movie Idiocracy, which I don't believe either of you have seen yet. Worth a watch, especially in these times.
How about if you go into, if you think about the dumb criteria, how about the obliviousness? Because that's where I start to say, if this person's just oblivious, they're not dumb. They're just, they don't get it. I don't know if that's just dumb.
No, yeah.
Choosing to ignore.
Just overhaul.
Or just oblivious.
Or like you very easily could find something out, but you just choose not to.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I only have so much space I want to take up in my brain. Some things I just don't really want to dive into.
Well, there's a lot of things that I'm dumb at then. Because
so am I.
I've been there, man. There's a lot of things that I'm just like, I don't have the time or the effort I want to put into that. So yeah, sure. Yeah.
Dumb criteria.
Yeah. Everybody has their own.
I think we should create a whole new list called the dumb factor. The brain of that person to actually say that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
You notice that I'm gasping for air as I'm trying to laugh. All right.
Nothing funny that I said there.
Let's talk some college foosball.
Okay.
Let's talk some college foosball. Over-under win totals by Caesars Entertainment have been released for the Pac-12 and really all of college football. There is this is kind of interesting in my mind, is what Caesars Entertainment telling us is that the Pac-12 is going to have a down year. Because the over-under win total, the leader in the clubhouse right now is Oregon, 9.5 wins. This is a team that's replacing their starting quarterback, replacing
grad transfer.
They have a lot of skill positions that they in 4/5 of their offensive line as well. Your starting quarterback, your second leading
Penny
receiver.
Penei Sewell sit out, be number one pick in the draft. I'm just saying.
Don't do that.
Or why not?
Then you have Washington and Utah at 8.5 wins and Arizona State at 8 wins. Mm-hmm. Everybody else is about scratching and clawing for bowl eligibility in the conference.
7-6.
What? 7-6?
Yeah, 7-6 wins, correct?
Three.
Because Cal should be up there.
They're
really
seven.
They're getting their quarterback back and they had 8 wins and that's and Justin Wilcox is doing some good things down there.
He's doing great
things.
They're
the sneaky team next year. Sneaky.
USC is at 8.
They're my underrated sneak.
Well, the two teams I will put in there,
USC.
Arizona State and Cal.
Oh, Arizona State's not sneaky.
But they're at 8 wins with USC.
They're officially on the map. They're now. They can't sneak in there. Cal, on the other hand, is getting their quarterback back, and they don't have the type of funds, and they don't have the type of backing like Arizona State does. I mean,
why are we playing Arizona State on the map?
Arizona State on the map? Because the way they've played the last 2 years. And Cal has had to do it with not only just, when you coach at Cal and you recruit to Cal and you try to invest and coach there with the way that Justin Wilcox, it's like playing football with one arm. And everybody else out there has got two.
He's the perfect guy for that job, though, with where he's been his path.
I mean, he's just a great coach.
He's
a great coach.
Cal has the academic requirements that go along with the school. And one of his previous stops, Wisconsin, had the exact same academic requirements. USC, to an extent, and Washington, to an extent, have those. But they tend to let the guy, if you want a guy, you can get that guy in. And I'll say flexible in that. But he's dealt with kind of how to navigate those waters before. And look at the wins, though, that they will have every year.
Crazy wins.
Last 2 years.
Goes on the road, wins the only SEC matchup.
Yeah, they go on the road, they beat Ole Miss. They go on the road, they beat Washington at the beginning of last year.
Yep,
beat Washington last 2:30
in the morning.
Yeah, beat them the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And I'll say this. They did not win. They gave Oregon a fight. Remember, that was a 17-7 ball game in October between them. Mm-hmm. They go and they beat Washington State last year as well.
Yep.
I mean, they have wins. And that's why I say, Arizona State has the win against Oregon that everybody kind of circled, right? But they also have some head-scratching losses as they do every year. And Arizona State's resume is probably built just as, you should be expecting just as much from Cal as Arizona State this year. I think both of them are going to be pretty surprising.
And that's why I hold Cal at a higher esteem, because I think they're more stable than Arizona State. Having those inexplicable losses makes sense with a Herm Edwards coach team, because he has that kind of helter-skelter coaching style where it's super emotional, and the types of players that he got are super emotional and they're more volatile. You know, Justin just coaches different. He coaches within his means. He owns Washington and Chris Peterson over the last 2 years because he coached with him at Boise State and coached at Washington and understands how to set up a defense to beat them and just beat them. Beat him straight up and beat him straight up with defense. And that's kind of what he does, is he coaches within his means. He doesn't try to outdo the room or pretend like he's somebody he's not. You're not going to get the guys at Cal, so you do the best of what you can. That's the sign of a great coach, when you can elevate a program that just can't. That's why David Shaw is such a great coach too, because they're doing things with parameters stuck into them that no one else has to deal with.
Oh, buddy, you want to talk about a team that's fallen on hard times?
Yeah,
Vegas has them at 5.5.
Stanford, the era of Stanford is gone now. And that's not David Shaw's fault. It's because of their graduate school rules. It's done.
That is so stupid that they do that. By the way, if you don't know, it's insanely hard to get into graduate school at Stanford. Mm-hmm. And what a lot of, I would say 99% of FBS programs do, is that if you have an athlete that wants his fifth year, so fifth year, you get in. All these Stanford guys, they graduate on time.
They actually graduate in 3.5, but they graduate fast.
And so they say, no, you have to qualify just as everybody else does for any graduate program we have. So they just say, well, if I have one more year left, I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gone.
Yeah.
Because here's reality of college football. Not everybody can play as a freshman. Shocking, huh?
You shouldn't.
Yeah.
Some shouldn't. Some. Yeah, you're right. You're not, but I don't know the percentage out there of freshmen that play, but it's still well below what I think. I think kids need time. I think sometimes if you're a quarterback, the way you're hit, but there's not a lot of offensive linemen are ready to play, or D linemen. Corners and some running backs, yeah, but you're right. It's just, you're not ready.
Well, and especially if you recruit a program to be as good as Stanford has been. I mean, if you have freshmen that aren't ready to play right away, that means that you've done your job on recruiting players and developing your talent. Mm-hmm. Like, and that's a good thing. Now, if you have a freshman that starts at an established program, that means that they're special. Like, look at the freshmen that play at the Oregons and Washingtons, Clemson, Alabama's.
Yeah, they're the quote-unquote four-star, five-star kids that are physically ready and able.
They're gifted. They're just gifted. And Stanford is running into a roadblock with their own university, as we can't properly develop our guys because we don't have enough time with them.
Well, that's how I look at this in the future, and I say the Power Four would eliminate. Stanford would be one team that you're going to end up taking off the board.
Stanford?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You can't. Stanford doesn't. It's not going to be able to hold up over time. Financially, it's not going to be able to hold up. The draw on television is awful. Nobody wants to look at those teams and those games on television. That's dreadful. That's not what you want to see. I mean, for gosh sakes, Ole Miss and Arkansas and all these other teams, and Oklahoma and TCU, Texas, even the average teams in the Big 12, Kansas State, you know, these teams that draw. That's what you're going up against, Stanford, and you can't even draw 10,000 people to your game. That's bad TV, and networks don't want to show that. That's another reason.
There's three programs that really stick out to me when you talk like Power Three and you put it in those terms there. You would think Stanford, Duke, Vanderbilt. Those would be very tough sells for football.
Yeah.
But where Duke would stay in is obviously their basketball program.
Yeah.
But Stanford and Vandy and Northwestern, they all kind of
fall into those.
Meh.
Yeah. Yeah. Meh. Falls right in there.
And Stanford of those three is probably the most powerful when you're talking all sports in there, because their basketball team hasn't been an absolute joke.
No, their baseball team's always really good, solid. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't feel for kids that go to Stanford, because once you get Stanford on your resume, it's like, oh my gosh, it's one of the best things you can have.
Yeah, one of my best friends, his brother-in-law played baseball at Stanford, and he's like, dude, it was Stanford. Like, of course you go.
Yeah.
You know, he's from Arizona.
Hard to turn down.
He's from Scottsdale. He's like, yeah, Arizona State would have been great, but it's Stanford. Like, you can do anything.
Different priorities. It's a different kind of athlete that wants to go to Stanford.
But in this is kind of Stanford falls in that group of, we mentioned that you have your top heavy teams there of 8.5 wins or more, which are considered good. And Utah may be a stretch at 8.5 wins with everything they have to replace. Think of all the pieces, their loaded defense, replacing all of it. You replace your quarterback, your running back, wide receiver. And I mean, they are replacing a lot, and they still, that's just Kyle Whittingham. They think he can just get 8.5 wins.
Yeah.
You know, like 8 wins is what Whittingham's floor is. But then you have like the Stanfords, UCLA, Washington State is at 6 wins. And then Oregon State, 5.5 wins, Cal at 7, and then Colorado, the bottom feeder and bottom dweller, is at 3 with Arizona at 4. Mm-hmm. They're saying everybody else is just fighting for bowl eligibility. Is that bad for the Pac-12 when you think of you think of that in those terms? The perception of the conference.
Yes. There's no question.
Because even the ACC, which is Clemson.
Yep.
By the way, Clemson's over-under is 11.5 mm-hmm. wins. Mm-hmm. They have Florida State, Louisville, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, Wake Forest, all hovering around that 8-win mark.
It's the dadgum mistake.
That's 5 teams mm-hmm. outside of Clemson. The Pac-12 is just like you got 3 teams and then just kind of everybody else in there. 55305, that's Fantex. I'd love to get your feedback on that. You want to talk some Mike Gundy? Hear from the
Here's
Oklahoma
some
State.
Audio.
Yeah, you hear from the Oklahoma State head coach, who's the latest to step in it with his COVID-19 comments. 818 on the Fan.
I'm a man. I'm 40.
Is it 100%? No, it's not 100%. Okay, but there could be people that work in this building that maybe are older, maybe have some type of underlying health condition, maybe they don't come back. But the majority of the people in this building who are healthy, and certainly the 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-olds that are healthy, the so-called medical people that are saying the herd of healthy people that have the antibodies maybe built up that can fight this, we all need to go back to work.
That is the voice of Oklahoma State coach Mike Gundy. He's catching heat for those comments. You know, saying we need
that was
to get,
just one.
We need to get to work.
That was one.
Where that one cuts off, he went on to say, and I could not find the additional part of that.
I sent him to Buck.
He said, we have the ability to fight this virus off, and you have the part where he says that we need the money to run through the state of Oklahoma? Because that was one I could not find anywhere, is that he said, if that is true, we need to sequester him and continue because we need to run money through the state of Oklahoma, based on college football. That, to me, is where Mike Gundy is catching heat because of the fact that he said, wait a minute. So you're saying that in the face of medical experts, and what he said there, and I think it is true, he's like, hey, there's people that are at risk, and we need to keep them away. Maybe they don't come back to work, the older people that are on staff or around. But if you're 18, 19, 20, 21 years old and you can have the ability to fight this virus off, then we need to get back to work. Mm-hmm. That is also kind of in the face of medical experts and what they're saying. Well, but then he says we need to run money through the state of Oklahoma.
What do you mean?
Well, he's saying that essentially it's a moneymaker. The business part of college football is why.
Yeah.
And he may have just ruined the amateur model of college football.
Well, that's kind of stating the obvious, but you're right. It kind of makes it a little bit more aware. I think the fear of that side of him coming out and saying it is that there's no group protecting the young athletes. So if a coach says, mm-hmm. today, and a university came out and said today, open for business, you're welcome back, and an athlete said, well, I'm afraid, I don't want to come back, and be like, okay, we're pulling your scholarship, see you later. Mm-hmm. We don't care about you. You're supposed to come back and make us money because you're in the amateur model. That part probably doesn't sit well. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
No.
Because what you're doing is you're saying that human life is certainly not as valuable as us making revenue for our university. That's why that's a little bit tone deaf in my mind.
That is very tone deaf.
Yeah. And I think that part of the, and I don't think he really believes that. I don't. I think that some of these guys just state their emotions and sometimes, and look, these football coaches like Dabo Swinney coming out and saying these things about how you can't make everybody happy. He's right. Mike Gundy, but I don't think Mike Gundy's a bad coach. because he goes on to say in that interview how you got to listen to the medical experts, and I know there are people suffering. And he didn't just all stand on the this is bull crap. He wasn't calling the CDC and everything crap.
No.
He was just stating what I think we're all thinking as humans is that our economy and our fear is shutting down, and we're scared. And we're scared of a disease. We're scared of our future. We're scared of our jobs, which can the economy. And I remember I've used this analogy like doctors. When you get an injury, a doctor will tell you, you got to take 6 weeks off. Okay, you hurt your back at work. You got to take 6 weeks. Well, doc, I think I can make it back in two. Nope, you got to take 6 weeks. Doctors are going to give you the doomsday mentality to try to make sure that you don't come back to them later and say, well, you told me it was 6 weeks, and now I'm at 6 weeks, and I'm still injured. That's part of doctor protocol. We've all been there. We've all seen that. And I'm not saying these doctors are doing this. Their job is to put the worst-case scenario out there for us so we follow and take it seriously.
Well, and I think one of the things that you can point to is that people that in areas that have taken this seriously, that doomsday scenario isn't playing out. And that is a good thing.
Yeah, of course it is.
I mean,
yes.
You know, the numbers are dropping dramatically, and it's not going to be as bad as they thought if people continue to do it, but you have to continue to do it. And that's where the dangerous part of this is, like the message of we just need to get back and get back to work. That is all contingent on when medical experts say so. And when you hear what Mike Gundy said there, when you hear him talking about we need to just get back to work and the young people are going to be fine, well, part of it is that, you know, spreading it, not knowing you're fine. And that is where it's lost in those clips. But you mentioned the other things that Gundy said, and he kind of sends mixed messages back and forth, but it wasn't like it was just this wildly irresponsible teleconference that he had, because he mentioned several times the opinions of medical professionals.
We got to have a plan, and so let's just stay on schedule. Everybody needs to relax, okay? And I'm not taking away from the danger of people getting sick. You have the virus, stay healthy, try to do what we can to help people that are sick, and we're losing lives, which is just terrible. But then the second part of it is that we still have to schedule and continue to move forward as life goes on and do everything we can to help those people.
So in so many words, he's saying we can keep our schedule without canceling it prematurely. I think that's what he's trying to say.
He's trying to say this, but you got to remember he's a football coach. So he's going to think like a football. You can't suddenly, when a football coach starts talking, he doesn't just turn into a CDC doctor. That's not how he thinks. I've always said move the drill mentality. I saw a guy get his leg snapped in half. Snapped in half on the practice field, screaming bloody murder. The trainer walked up to, the coach walked over, said, 5 yards forward, didn't even bat an eyelash. Now, is that the right thing to do at the time? That was the mentality. And I'm saying that's the right thing to do now. The football mentality is we have to move forward. We have to try. Some people want to wallow in the fear and they want to sit in it and they want to hide inside and they want to be scared and they want to, and that makes them feel comfortable or whatever that is. I'm not in the psychology business. Others think we have to find a way to move forward. We have to try a way to think positive. We have to try to think of what can we do in the future. And I think football coaches, they're always trying to move forward. They're always trying to think of scenarios and how we do this and how we do that because that's their job. They're hired to be coaches, and they're hired to do that. So don't expect them to be the most eloquent and empathetic to everybody out there. They're just not good at it.
But here lies the problem that we were talking about yesterday with Dabo, is that when you are the highest paid employee in your state, you know, and you are a multi-million-dollar revenue generator for your state, which we talk about all the time.
Right.
Whether you like it or not, or people should or not, mm-hmm. which I don't think they should, they rely on you to kind of set that example.
Leadership. They're leaders.
They look at that to be kind of this, hey, follow my lead. Yeah, it is 100%. It's mm-hmm. leadership. And mm-hmm. when you have these guys kind of just saying the way that the Gundy and Dabo are handling it, that's not what they're portraying, because it is what you're talking about. Their mentality and what they grew up with was, no, I don't look at things like that ever. And that is the problem, is that then other people will take it as, oh, well, I can do the same thing.
Well, unfortunately, we live, Dusty, in a free mind country. We're not communists. We're not living dictatorships. And that's a tough line to start telling everybody to think a certain way. It's really hard, and I wish it was easier, but here, the way we live, we're never going to stop that. And should we stop people that listening to Nick Saban? And I know, like you mentioned it yesterday, that's why Ed Orgeron is giving PSAs and Nick Saban is talking about mm-hmm. certain things in his state. And everybody thinks of it because they look for them for leadership because they are the leaders.
Absolutely.
Now, they are, of course. Now, if they don't say it perfectly, like a Mike Gundy or anything, do we maybe want to throw Mike Gundy as this awful individual that has no empathy for people? I don't believe that is true.
Well, he's not that, but I don't think he should be painted that way. But and this is why yesterday with the Dabo conversation, it was the same thing. Is that you know, we're playing that clip, and then this one too is context matters because it wasn't just like Gundy was saying we need to just go business as usual.
We need to get back to playing football for a variety of reasons. If the medical people say we can. We don't need to let 1 or 2 months take that away from us. There's too many people that are relying on it.
And when you say it, here's the qualifier was in there. Mm-hmm. If the medical people say it's okay.
So he's not beyond tone deaf and just throwing everything that's out there under the bus saying it's all crap. He's not taking that stance.
And that is where I sit there and I take it, his delivery of what's happening. And this is why it's such a hard thing and why people like, you know, Dr. Fauci are so important is that they have the expertise in that field. And we listen to people that don't have expertise in the certain fields to get our advice and get our information from. And that can be a dangerous thing. And that can be, you know, when we're talking a football coach is no medical expert. And that's kind of where they should kind of lean on this and say, do what a lot of guys like Mac Brown, I thought, went on Paul Feinbaum's show and he handled it mm-hmm. wonderfully, where he was like, look, you know, football and fans go hand in hand. They do, you know, and so we shouldn't have football if we can't have fans. And if fans can't be in the stadium because medical experts say it's not a safe thing for them to be, then maybe we just shouldn't have football because it's too dangerous. Because he said, if you think about it, if it's too dangerous to have fans in the stands sitting next to each other, then what about the guys who are hitting each other, breathing on each other, leaning on each other for 3.5 hours?
I don't have those answers. I just don't.
That's kind of a more level-headed approach and what people are kind of looking towards from their public leaders.
Well, the fear is the economic factor of what football has done for everybody out there, especially financially for these universities. I mean, these universities will fail. When I mean fail, they will be gone. Their doors will shut. They won't be able to operate. They will have nothing. I mean, I spoke to a good friend that's a college football coach yesterday, a head football coach yesterday, and their major fear, major fear about how you're going to operate and what's going to happen. But those are honest fears. Don't throw it aside and say, well, we all need to get back and there's a lot of businesses. There's a lot of people that rely on athletics for their livelihood, and they don't have a second option. They don't. And there's a lot of people out there that are dealing with the same things. This isn't just a sports issue. This is a universal issue. But because we're a sports show, we're going to talk about that.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's where it doesn't land well with everyday people is, you know, Gundy saying, you know, essentially football is too important. We need it. Well, there's a lot of other people that are also having their jobs derailed right now, too. Mm-hmm. And I think that is where you see a lot of this outrage manifesting itself is that they're saying, you know, a lot of people are looking at those comments and going, why are you so different from what I'm going through? You know, and they're not. They're not at this time. It affects a lot of people. And this is one of those things why we say it time and time again. Uncharted territory that we're in. And I agree with you. Mike Gundy, I don't think he's a bad guy. Dabo Swinney, I don't think he's a bad guy. It's just they are living in their bubble and their realm, which a lot of people are right now. 55305, that's a fan text line. We'll get some of your thoughts on this. Plus, we need to circle back at some point on our best fictional sports movies of the 2000s. And really, where does the best one of the 2000s rank in just the 90s decade alone? We had that conversation earlier. Dustin Kim, here's Buck. You sit there in your heartache, waiting on some- Hey, we're talking Mike Gundy, his latest comments. He's taken a lot of heat.
I'm a man! I'm 40!
And, you know, everybody has their own opinions on how everybody else should handle these things. And I thought, you know, you made a lot of really good points on that. And you say this all the time, and this isn't just now that you say this, Cam, is that you talk about how it is... Football coaches live in their bubble, and the most important thing, and like this is a weird time for them because like they literally have no football going on. Usually it's 24/7, 365 for these guys.
Yep.
They got nothing going on right now. So all that they want and they think about is getting football back for them. And yeah. That's and so when we look for them for, you know, wise words and words of wisdom.
Well, they're not politicians.
No.
They're also not, they're not all perfect, eloquent speakers that will give you uplifting mindsets, that will think about the vast universe of global picture. And they're not there to do that. They're there to give you the tough, burly, sometimes really hard decisions of what it takes to play this game. I've always said this, and I believe it. Like I've never believed anything more in my life, is that you have to be somewhat bonkers crazy to be in the game of football. You can't be average. You can't be toe dipping. You are either in or you're out. And when you're a head football coach, you're all in. You're all in crazy and you're all in obsessed. You have to be the best players in this world. The best coaches in this world are obsessed. Now, obsessed doesn't always mean a positive, but when it comes to success in football, it is a positive to be obsessed.
But you're also seeing some of these guys like, you know, whether it is Ed Orgeron, who's like, hey, my opinion on this doesn't matter. I'm just going to go ahead and, you know, the governor's asked me to do a PSA. I'm going to shut my mouth. I'm going to do it. Sure. I'm going to do what Nick Saban did, too. And then you have guys like Dabo and Gundy who they're just going to say what they say. And they, Mike Leach is another example of this, right? Like Leach, he's going through sensitivity training now.
No, it's not just sensitivity training. Mississippi State has announced that Mike Leach will participate in, hold with me here for a second, pause for dramatic effect, listening sessions to expand his cultural awareness of Mississippi.
A tweet obviously lost him a couple of players to transfer with the wife knitting the noose. And I guess that if you don't know, he had a meme where he said like day whatever of quarantine.
Also, if you don't know, Mike Leach loves memes.
Yes, he does.
He's a memer.
You know, wife whatever day whatever on quarantine. Wife knitting a noose for her husband.
Yeah.
And he tweeted that out. Well, in Mississippi, that has a totally different.
Yes, it does.
And so.
Yes, it does.
That is where that's coming from on his end, but. I don't know. At least they're doing something. And
listening
at least
sessions. This is where. Okay. Yeah.
Well, isn't that just
a
different way of saying?
I feel pretty comfortable that Mike Leach isn't advocating for lynching.
No, he's not.
I feel pretty comfortable that Mike Leach is not that person. Okay, and he didn't mean to apply that or anything of that nature. I feel pretty good about that.
I do too.
So if this is Mike, what? Again, the mob and the herd are coming after Mike Leach, trying to get him into this. Do you want Mike Leach to be different? Not GIF anymore? Okay.
Well, Mississippi State knew what they were getting when they hired Mike Leach.
Yes,
which
they
is
did.
A guy who is on social media. He's not afraid to say what he thinks on social media. And sometimes he steps in it. And he did it again. And, you know, to his credit, too, he's going to be participating in it. This is just a different way of saying it's sensitivity training.
Listening session. That sounds like something you do with your wife after she's mad at you.
Well, and that is a form of sensitivity training because you need to be more sensitive, damn it. But, you know, all of these coaches, back to the bigger point, they do, like, there are coaches that no matter what, they're going to say what they feel, and we know it, and you're going to get it.
And I love that. I love it. I don't want to be lied to. I don't want to be pandered to. And I certainly don't want to be PSA'd all the time to the point where you're trying to just say something with no conviction.
But if you don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, don't say it.
And that's where, you know, Dabo and Gundy are falling into a hole is that they're going against,
but
even though Mike Gundy is saying, if the medical experts say it's good to go, they're going against what the medical experts are saying by saying we just need to get back to business and we need to get the young people back in the buildings.
But now, it's not. But it's an opinion. It's just a feel of normalcy and wanting to get back to. He's not wrong in what he's saying.
But delivery is it.
But I'm not the guy from Oklahoma. You want to have delivery. I mean, that's not a knock on Oklahoma. It's not a knock on the South and all those other things. What he's saying isn't wrong. It's Dabo Sweeney, what he's saying is not, he's not wrong. These are just the normal to them, their normal lives, what they believe in is what their feeling is. It's a different than somebody that lives somebody else. I just, being able to understand it and decipher it and not get offended by it blows me away sometimes. I mean, I don't understand. I have a hard time with that because I don't get wrapped up in what everybody says all the time, whether it's perfect or whether it's tone deaf or anything. I just go, man, just... Different cultures, different people.
And that is, that's where it
our
is.
Our freedom that we
part,
have in this country, I never take for granted,
well,
ever.
And nobody's saying you can't say it. It's just there's a responsibility that goes with being a public figure. And that responsibility is a big one. That's a big weight to bear. And I think that is where, you know, the criticisms come from with these guys is the medical professionals are saying something completely different. Even though they keep saying, whether it's Gundy or Dabo or whomever,
so do you feel it's
lean
a little
on the medical professionals? What they're saying is in the face of what is a complete opposite of right. What the medical professionals are saying.
Well, we're in the sports industry, and I always use that. And these football coaches are in the sports industry. Doesn't it feel like you're taboo to think about moving forward? Like if you're not, there's times when I go, gosh, I just want to get out of this. Like yesterday was a really hard day for me with the high school sports announcement. It was a bad day. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I didn't like it. I mean, there were so many kids that I know personally that are going to lose their opportunity. And it just, you know, hit harder than I thought it was going to. And there was like, this is dumb. They're bad decisions and stuff like that. And I go, well, if I say that, I'm going to get crapped on. Well, I just said it because it was emotional. I was emotional about it. And I know it's probably... Deep down inside, I know it's probably the right decision. Doesn't mean it doesn't sit well, and you accept it, you move on. But if you say something that's not just living in the exact moment of fear and mongrels, it's like there's this taboo thought that we can get out of this. Like people predicting no more football, no sports for 18 months. Dr. Fauci saying yesterday, this is never going to change the rest of our lives until we have a vaccine, the rest of the world. Well, my dad lived through polio. You want to watch what a whole country did during polio? Watch that documentary on PBS. I mean, we forget how brutal it was. I mean, my dad couldn't walk. He was paralyzed. You know, those types of things. The way they put kids in iron lungs and family and all this and made them stay in for years in an iron lung, trapped in hospitals, fears of pandemics, epidemics, and all of those things. We can get through this, but it's not taboo to talk about trying to move forward.
And that is, I don't think that there should be optimism and hope. Like that,
yes,
that is something that.
That
should be there. And I think that what we're looking at though, is we're trying to prevent all of those things that you were talking about with polio as much as we possibly can. And that is where you have to go day by day. And that's kind of where we're at with this right now is there is no long-term answer right now. And I think that's the hardest part about it is that if you have no long-term answer, you're just going day to day on what you have. And that makes it hard for the optimism to show through. Yeah. And
I like to try to think of, I have enough salty bitterness in my life too. And I'm not going to try to convince everybody to be different. I like to use hope sometimes and say, man, we're going to get through this and take that stance with this because tragedy is what we're dealing with. We have a lot of tragedy, a lot of families, a lot of lives being lost, a lot of fear, a lot of jobs being lost, a lot of money, sports-wise, industry. There's not an industry out there that isn't affected. There's not one.
Nope.
Not one that isn't affected by this. And we're all trying to make it through it together.
55305, fan text line. Best fictional sports movie of the 2000s. We will hammer that one down. And then... where does it rank how far down the list of the movies from the 90s, sports movies to the 90s, do you have to get to have the number one from the 2000s? Oof. Dustin Cam on the Fan. This is how we do it. It's Friday night, and I feel all right. All right, we were talking earlier. This time yesterday, you brought up the question, is there a great sports movie from the 2000s, fictional sports movie, not part of a franchise, not a reboot or remake, is there a great one of the 2000s? We tried to figure it out. Did we settle on it's probably Talladega Nights or Dodgeball?
You think it's Dodgeball. I'm not either in.
Saying Talladega Nights might be.
Oh, okay.
It.
And my contention was that I would give Blades of Glory the nod over those
Buck
two.
Buck likes that.
If you're looking at my top five non-fictional sports movies, number one from the 2000s would be Talladega Nights, The Wrestler.
Really?
Yeah.
Wrestler.
Love and Basketball, Dodgeball. And then, oh boy, probably either Blades of Glory or Million Dollar Baby would be, that's like 5A and 5B.
Yeah.
But, okay, so take whatever you believe it is, Talladega Nights or Blades of Glory or Dodgeball, whichever one you want. Would it be better than any of the movies that I'm about to read to you, which are, are non-fiction, or they are, excuse me, they are fictional sports movies
from
the 1990s, which may be the greatest decade ever.
Can you throw Blue Crush in there because it's a surfing movie? Kidding.
No. Sorry. If I'm doing that, I'm putting Big Lebowski in there because that's a bowling movie.
Oh, okay. All right. Well.
But I won't. Okay.
Kingpin is in the top 10.
And this is in no particular order here.
Okay.
I'll put Kingpin in it. I'll put Kingpin
in. You don't
in.
Have to.
Because that one is about bowling. Big Lebowski's
bowling.
Not.
Right.
All right. Space Jam. And this is no particular order.
No particular
this is not
orders
my ranking.
Here.
Would you put any of those movies from the 2000s?
Do you want an answer immediately when you say it? Because you say you, and I assume you're talking to Buck and I.
Yeah. Or well, listeners. Everybody out there.
Everybody out there.
Okay. Space Jam.
No.
Sandlot.
No.
Jerry Maguire.
No.
Mighty Ducks.
Yes.
Ooh. Which one's better than Mighty Ducks?
Talladega Nights.
Talladega Nights better than Mighty Ducks.
Okay. Disagree.
I disagree as well. Waterboy.
No.
Varsity Blues.
No.
White Men Can't Jump.
No.
Any Given Sunday.
No.
Tin Cup.
No.
Happy Gilmore.
No way.
The Program.
No.
Kingpin.
No.
Nope.
None.
So by my count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. That's 11 movies, and I have Mighty Ducks, so I'll put 12 in there.
Yeah.
There's 12 movies better from the 1990s that are fictional sports movies that are better than the best from the 2000s. That's amazing.
What does that say about the industry? Is that it? Has it run dry?
No, I think it goes back to what we were talking about earlier in that
creativeness.
Just the ideas it flipped. Like the focus of the 2000s became
more
sports documentaries and
true stories.
True story.
Well, I would make this contention that sports is the ultimate theater. I mean, we watch because we don't know what's going to happen. We watch for the drama and the stories that actually happen in sports, the Cinderella stories, the underdog stories, those are better than the ones that people come up with in a fictional realm.
And that's why I sit there and I look at, you know, all of those movies that I read were fictional movies, completely fiction, not based on true stories. But in the 2000s, they had some great movies on real life events, like what Buck's talking about, because this text came in and said, Remember the Titans. That's a great movie.
It is.
But it's about a real story.
Yeah.
Now, was it dramatized? Absolutely. 100%. Yes. Yeah. But it was based on a true story. The Blind Side fits in that category. The list kind of goes on and on. 42, whatever.
Yeah, it just was a different era where you wanted to tell stories in a movie instead of make one.
Yeah, and that's what the last 20 years have been. Yeah. I think we're going to come back around because
it will
be cyclical about it, because the 80s had a lot of them based on, you know, true events, because 8 Men Out, wasn't that an 80s movie?
Yeah. It was either late 80s or early 90s, but yeah.
And so you kind of had it, there's that shift. And we've had P1 Raymond says this one, and a lot of other ones are in there too. Mystery Alaska. I have never seen it.
I don't know if I've seen Mystery
Alaska.
It's
about hockey, right?
Really good movie. It's like, it's almost like what Friday Night Lights is to football for hockey. It's
a
small little town in Alaska where everything is about hockey there.
Where would you rank it in Mystery for hockey movies?
Oh, it's, I mean,
is it right? It's not up there. It's not.
It's way up there. It's a really good
movie.
Really? And it'd be a good family movie. You should watch it with your family.
Hockey's got a sneaky good list of great movies.
They do.
From Miracle
Slapshot, Goon, Mighty Ducks.
Oh, you guys are forgetting about Youngblood now. Don't sleep on Youngblood.
Never seen Youngblood.
You haven't seen Youngblood with Rob Lowe?
No.
Oh.
Rob Lowe on skates would be something.
Rob Lowe. I mean, that. I think the movie The Goon is based off of one of the goons that's in that movie. He was a really good goon.
Goon is funny.
Rob Lowe, funny you got to see Youngblood.
All right.
You guys, you haven't seen it either, Dusty?
I will see Youngblood. No. You got to watch Mystery Alaska.
Okay, that's fair. I'm in it. Done.
And by the way, Mystery Alaska from 1999. Snuck right in there.
That
at the
might
end.
Have been the best one if it had made it into 2000.
Snuck in there right at 1999.
Although, wait, is that based on a true story? Is Mystery Alaska real?
Ooh.
It might be.
Questions.
No. I don't know. It can't be. No. It says it's a comical tale about the residents of a small remote Alaskan town and their preoccupation of the ice hockey. Excitement comes to town when, as part of a publicity stunt, the professional stars of the New York Rangers come to Alaska to face off against a local amateur team in a televised match. I don't think that ever happened.
No, probably not.
No.
I'd be up for it.
But it makes for good cinema.
Mm-hmm. You know, the MLS does that with the U.S. Open Cup. Where, like, you can have, like, club teams that you work your way up through a tournament, but eventually you could play an MLS team after you make it through. Maybe hockey should do that. Mystery Alaska. Let's go.
I'm excited to watch this movie.
All right.
You guys got to watch also Beastmaster.
Beastmaster. You must
watch Beastmaster. Must. All right. Report back.
Up next is the Herd with Colin Cowherd, 9 to noon, noon to 3, Dirt and Sprague, 3 to 7, primetime with Isaac and Suk. Then hot, going up, Harrison Lynch. Have a great Wednesday. See you Thursday right here on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.